is Within You, the Ananda Europe podcast. Hello everyone and welcome to this episode of Joy is Within You, the Ananda Europe podcast. If you've listened to these episodes before, you perhaps know that up until now we've been talking with people for about 15 minutes and they've been sharing their experiences on the path and how they arrived, either at Ananda or on the path itself. But this week we've got something a little bit different. We've got a very special guest joining us today, Indra. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. And we're going to be talking with Indra about a topic a little bit more precise this week. We're really looking at a theme of Yogananda's teachings and his mission in bringing yoga to the West. So I'm not going to say much more. But I'm just going to ask Indra if he wouldn't mind very briefly just introducing himself to us all, how perhaps he found the teachings, how he connected with Ananda, and also how he made his way to this community, because as you will be able to tell very quickly, Indra is not Italian and he's not European. So he's made a longer journey to be here to stay at this community.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for having me. And so as Parvati mentioned, my name is Indra. And I'm American, if you can't tell from my Yankee accent. And I first came to know about Ananda and Paramahansa Yogananda in 2006 and 7. And that's also just about the time that I moved to the Ananda Village community in Nevada City, California. And I was basically at a point in my life where I knew I was looking for community. I was looking for more in my life. I was already practicing yoga and meditation, but there was a feeling that I wanted to go deeper and I wanted more. You know, I would often go to the yoga studio, practice, you know, at least every day, but I would always go back home and go back to just a normal job. And I knew, okay, if I really want to go deeper in this, I need to be surrounded by people who aren't just doing this an hour every day, but are living it all day, every day. And so, you know, this idea kind of sprouted in my mind about community and this concept of living around people who were wanting to go deeper in spirituality and practicing yoga and meditation. And so that little seed began to grow and became a sprout and a bush and then a giant tree to a certain point where I knew I needed community. I knew I couldn't go almost another day without some form of a stronger environment that helped me. And that was about the time where I found out about Ananda by reading a book by Swami Kriyananda. And I walked around with that book for weeks, and I like that was my Bible. I didn't put it down. Specifically, it was the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. But it was just so every word, every sentence spoke to me, spoke to my soul in a way I knew that not only do I need to know more about who this person is, where this book came from, and a broader context of what it all meant. And so literally I packed up a U-Haul without knowing very much and loaded all my stuff into it and drove up to Nevada City, not really knowing what I was going to find, but I knew I needed to be there. So that was kind of the start of my life at Ananda, and more specifically at the Village. I was at the Ananda Village for about 7 or 8 years before I came to Ananda Assisi here in Italy. You know, long story short, I met a beautiful Italian girl and we got married and now have two beautiful kids, young boys, and I've lived here for about 6 years now. So,
brilliant. We're so grateful and appreciative that you do, because yeah. We love you and we love your beautiful family very much. Brilliant. Thank you. So I'm hearing already similarities, actually. Kabir spoke last week about, you know, just jumping in the car and heading to California to the community. So it's really interesting how Master moves now and calls to people who are really ready. But if I may just ask a question about what you've just shared, when you talk about going deeper, what does that mean to you? What did that mean? Apart from, okay, so living in the community, being surrounded by people who were practicing the same things, but a sense of depth. Mm-hmm. What was it within you that was really calling for you to take the step from going to a yoga class, perhaps, and practicing, to making it more a way of life. Could you perhaps share what's the difference?
Yeah, and maybe I'll step back even a little bit further in my life for when I was a teenager, just to kind of highlight really a very important lesson that I learned that relates to environment. I was kind of a troubled teenager.
Weren't we all?
Yeah, in fact, I'm sure. And I didn't, my parents were separated. And so I lived with my mom most of the time, which was in Washington State. My dad lived in California. And I was always getting trouble. And my mom would send me away. And I would kind of resolve on my own to change something. Okay, I'm going to do this or do this different. But then I would always come back to my environment, my same friends, my same environment, and nothing would change. And I was unable to change in subtle ways and in larger ways. And so even from an early age, I really understood that the power of environment and community and how those are fundamental for anything that we want to accomplish. You know, I would take the example of, you know, somebody who's wanting to be a world-renowned musician. If they go to a college that focuses on sports and they're surrounded by athletes all day, that might be all good, but they're not going to be able to go as deep in the art of music as they would normally like to or would want to, because they simply don't have that environment. They don't have that group magnetism that is trying to go profoundly deep in one specific subject. Well, here at Ananda, our subject happens to be spirituality and the teachings that Paramahansa Yogananda brought to us. And so when I was referring to depth, I'm referring to that a lot of things. I mean, depth is a word that's thrown around in many different ways. But for me personally, it was that desire to live something more profoundly that I felt, you know. And so those moments that we find ourselves maybe in a yoga class where we have profound calmness or a sense of peace in the world, you know, we've all been there, and that tends to, you know, we go back into our normal lives maybe, and that escapes us. We get caught in the dramas of work, life, family life, whatever it may be. But I knew that what depth meant to me at that point was trying to prolong those moments of contentness, of peace, of joy, of happiness, ultimately, which is, you know, I think fundamentally what we're all looking for. And so that's what it meant to me, was to find people who are also trying to live that way, and looking at the general concept of, you know, what does it mean to be happy? Can I be happy? Can I only be happy when I'm doing yoga, you know, for that hour a day, or can I be happy all day long? You know, and what does that mean to explore that and go deeper into that? So
wonderful. Thank you. That's fantastic. That's a really clear answer. Thank you. And so you mentioned that the book that you found was The Essence of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Swami Kriyananda's commentaries. Yeah. Now that links us perfectly into the topic really of this podcast, because this year, for people who aren't aware, is the 100th year anniversary of Yogananda's arrival in America. And so every month in Ananda this year, we've celebrated or focused, let's say, our energy on a certain theme. And September is the unity between East and West, because this is one of the key topics or key elements, let's say, of Yogananda's mission. So it strikes me immediately that you found this book, which is the most perhaps quintessential Indian Eastern book you could have found. I thought at first perhaps you were going to say Swami's books on community, you know, something like that caught you, because that's actually what you perhaps felt you were looking for. Mm-hmm. But Master came to you through his teachings on the Bhagavad Gita. So could you share with us potentially a little bit about what that book did to you, why it grabbed you so much, and also perhaps did you ever imagine that you would be living as a disciple of an Indian master, you know, as an American in the 21st century? How do you reconcile these ideas?
The short answer is no, I could have never imagined that. But I think, you know, to some degree, that is a part of what's so beautiful about this path, is the lack of certain forms. You know, it's, yes, master is an Indian, you know, from Indian heritage, but, you know, he came to the West and he loved nothing more than the United States and the modern kind of can-do attitude. And, you know, and I think that that emphasis on what works is such a big component of this path. You know, it's very practical. It's the it's not dogmatism in the sense that, okay, he didn't just come to the West to say, okay, these are the Indian teachings. He had such a individual approach. You know, here he finds himself in a new land and a new world, completely different than, you know, not even just the United States, but Los Angeles of all places, you know, for those of you who've been there. Just such the epitome of materialism and worldliness and this just grandiose atmosphere. But he was just right at home there, you know, because he's able to he wasn't trying to apply a religion on top of something else. He was trying to inspire and draw out the best of what was there. And he saw such potential in these American people and especially in LA and obviously traveling all around the United States and anywhere he went. His mission was to draw out the best in them, not apply his Indian philosophy or beliefs on top of them. And I think that's something that Swami Kriyananda also perfectly embodied. And when I read the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, I wasn't reading a Hindu text and a greater understanding of the Hindu philosophy. I was reading truth. And that's a big part of what we believe here. And at Ananda is truth is one and the same. And, you know, that truth can be perceived in any religion, in any circumstance, as long as we're looking and we're open to it. But I think that a lot of times the problem with most religions and even most philosophies is that you're so fixated on seeing what you believe to be as truth in a certain way, you're no longer receptive to seeing truth in any other way. And so that's, you know, where countless thousands of years of war and interreligion separations and just constant issues is that concept of not being able to be adaptive and see truth for what it is and wherever it may come from. So I think that essence of the Bhagavad Gita book was just truth to me. It wasn't anything more than that. And I could feel it and perceive it. So,
Thank you. And so America, let's think a little bit about perhaps why Master, his mission was America, because there were other countries, no, but it was very specific. He had the vision. If people have read the autobiography, you know that at a certain point Master's meditating and he has a vision. And he said, oh, these faces must be American, no. And so immediately then, he understands that it's time for his mission in the West to begin. So I've been listening recently to Asha on YouTube, and she's been talking a little bit about this, you know, this, well, quite a lot actually, about this element of Master's mission in particular and why America. But just as you've touched on it a little bit now, what do you feel, you know, how is it for you also as an American, you know, knowing that Master's teachings are firmly embedded in America, no? Because, for example, I'm English and there are a couple of centres, I believe, you know, but as a Sangha, let's say, the energy is starting to move now and the UK is starting to really come together. But there in America, I mean, you have some groups already. No, it's certainly more fixed. Ananda has been going for 50 years. So why America? What do you feel as an American that this mission is all about there?
Yeah, at least why it started there. I think there's a lot that we could talk about. But I think, you know, to some in comparison to a lot of other countries in the world, America's very young. It's kind of a teenager, you know. And Master even talked about that it just really doesn't have a lot of past karma, you know, as far as thousands of years of world wars or whatever else it may be. And so I think to some degree there was an openness there, you know, even how we find amongst teenagers, you know, there's an openness there. You know, as people age, it becomes much more harder to change or adapt or be willing to try something new. And so on an energetic level, I think the country was the right place. And as a people, talking about the people, Americans, I think there's a very can-do attitude. You know, nothing is impossible. You know, and it's funny because I've lived here in Italy now for about 6 years, and you know, you might think it's okay, it's just cultural, it's just, you know, a way of being raised. But it's funny now when I actually go back there, I feel it. I feel this concept that there's just endless space. It's just open. You know, there's just so much room for trying new things. Energetically, there's so much space. Is kind of the sensation that I have, and I think. It was probably only the place that a new, I'll say, quote unquote, religion could be born, because there was so much room and so much space for something this big. You know, I think when we're talking about self-realization and these teachings that Master brought, we're not talking about something small or a nice little group of people practicing something. We're talking about a huge new way of living, of perceiving the world, of, you know, the path of Kriya Yoga. And so that needed a big stage. And I think America could be that stage. Mm-hmm. And as I spoke about the American people, I think culturally, America doesn't have a huge history of culture as well. It's a mixed match of so many different cultures, which makes it also the perfect place to be open and willing to try something new. You know, you have Germans, you have English, you have Mexicans, you have Spanish, you have so much that, you know, it's the openness was there, I think. I don't want to emphasize, like, there is a big emphasis on America, of course, and that's where it started. But I wouldn't want anybody to get the idea that, oh, I need to go to America to practice these teachings or, you know, and so. Just to say also, that was a place where I think it was important that this was all born. But obviously in all these years, you know, especially Ananda and Master's teachings in general have branched out to every country in the world. And, you know, no matter where you find yourself, I think the most important thing as a disciple or somebody who is trying to grow spiritually is embodying that spirit of receptivity, attunement, no matter where you find yourself, you know, if it's in Russia and India and in South America, wherever it may be, you don't need to go to California or America to get the most out of this.
Yes, absolutely. Well said. And that leads us nicely on to the next point, because we're entering this idea from a geographical perspective, mm-hmm. but we can also take the essence of this balance in East and West. We can bring it down to a slightly more microscopic level, you know, and think about what does the balance between two polarities within us mean? What is it that we're trying to balance between ourselves now? And what is it for you in Master's teachings that, what has Master brought you? Why Yogananda? You know, why this path? So if we can take it now a little bit down from the global mm-hmm. perspective, very much to the personal, what is it that this life is becoming for you, or mm-hmm. this way of life has given you so far?
Yeah. Why Master chose me, I have no idea. But they say that when the student is ready, the Master comes. And I think, he brought me is a understanding of life in general, a broader context. Everybody is, you know, there's various forms of yogis or people in general. I mean, there's those who are jnani yogis, who think more mentally and logically. There's bhakti yogis who feel more, respond to life more from the heart. And there's karma yogis who... essentially, their mission is through serving others, serving, you know, the world. And I think those three archetypes, however you would call them, really summarize most people in the world, if not everybody in some way. Sure, there can be crossover. Maybe you can feel that you're more of a bhakti or karma yogi or a jnana karma yogi, whatever it may be. And I think what these teachings were able to do were to touch me in a place of who I am. So I'm a very Gyani Yogi. I'm very intellectual, but I'm also a Karma Yogi. I love to serve others, to help others. And, you know, this path isn't just for one type of person. It really has something for everybody, if you will, you know. And I think what I was able to find here is a way to take something that's inherently natural to me, maybe an intellect. And I think without this path, I think that can become, you know, maybe you find yourself as a professor or in a mathematician or something else. But those arts can only take us so far. Those skills can always take so far. And I think that's why you find a lot of cynical artists or maybe cynical professors or other people who are at the top of their trades who feel like they have nowhere to go and I think are a little bit depressed by that. You know, you even take actors or famous people who have arrived at the pinnacle of what, you know, at least modern day success is said to be. And you find suicides, you find huge levels of depression because you can only go so far in that reality, in that mindset. And I think what Master brought us is, and what he brought me, was a context that's much bigger than just the superficial, obviously. It's a world where that's layers upon layers upon layers. And it's not necessarily just the theoretical understanding of all of that, which is important for me, is understanding, okay, my place in the context of a greater world. But it's also the practical techniques to do, to work with the different levels of consciousness or states that we're at. You know, knowing that we have control. You know, I think a lot of people go through life and you're helpless. You know, okay, I just got fired. You know, I'm going to go into depression. I'm going to go into anger. I'm going to states of fear or whatever the situation might be. Maybe I have a health problem. I think what Master's teachings have brought me is that concept that I'm in control. You know, no matter what happens, sure, in a larger context, I'm not in control. Anything can happen. But at the end of the day, I can choose to have control over my reactions, my emotions, my level of consciousness in general. And Master brought those teachings to help us with that, you know. So whether it's chanting a music, if we're in a place of anger or sadness, whether it's the energization exercises or understanding healing prayers, if we're going through physical ailments or mental ailments, the opportunities and what he brought is truly endless. But for me personally, going back to a personal aspect, for me, the most important piece, one of the most important pieces, is that awareness that I can choose how I'm responding to whatever may be happening in my life. And, you know, I had a little bit of a rough childhood, nothing extreme, but, you know, I felt so helpless. You know, I felt, you know, especially as a kid, not knowing where, you know, the answers to things or not knowing where to even look for them. And so I think that's where these teachings come in my life, of really being able to understand a broader context to life and what we're doing here on this planet called Earth.
Yeah, so. Super. Thank you. Yeah, and again, it touches that element of practicality now that also ties in with what we were saying before. This is a practical path, you know, it's the keys to live in, you know, and also children having this knowledge of being able to choose how they respond, you know, it just opens the way for a completely transformed experience of life, yeah, which absolutely. The masters tell us is intended to be a happy one. No, that's the idea.
Yeah. Education and entertainment.
That's what Master said. Yeah, in fact. So, if I may, if we just think a little bit about our line of masters, because Yogananda is the last in our line of gurus. Mm. But what he represents and brought obviously goes through his guru Sri Yukteswar, his param guru Lahiri Mahashaya, and we have Babaji who, you know, opened the way as well for Kriya to come. He gave the permission for Kriya to come through to all. Traditionally, it's been reserved. Now, these kind of spiritual seeking, spiritual path and practices have been reserved for people who were ready and wanted to renounce completely everything. Go and live in an ashram, in a monastery, in a cave, you know, really step out of the world. And this path that we are living isn't offering us that as the only solution, no. And if I may, I'd just like to ask you a little bit about this, because obviously, as you said, you have a wife, you have a family, you have a job also, which comes with great responsibilities. But you are a yogi, you are practicing these teachings, you are on the quest for self-realization, and you are living that. So how does Master's Mission tie up that or touch that element, you know? What has he brought to the world in that sense? Mm-hmm. Because he did mention about communities now at the Beverly Hills Garden Party. You know, he talked about that. Like you said, people living together to go deep and practice. What's the potential here for this being almost an age-changing concept, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, and I think there was a few aspects in there that I can touch on. First, kind of starting at the beginning a little bit, there's this concept of the yugas, which are great arcs of time. And this is a big part of Hinduism in general, but Sri Yukteswar kind of brought he clarified it a little bit more. And basically said that there's these four ages. One is of Kali Yuga, one is Dwapara, one is Treta, and one is Satya. And they're long periods of time. For instance, Kali is, each strand is 1,200 years, Dwapara is 2,200. And basically in the last 200-300 years, we've been in this transition from Kali Yuga to Dwapara Yuga. Kali Yuga, the lowest age, is the material age. It's all about form and structure and rules. And if you look back through history, the last, 2,000 years, that's what you see. You see really a focus on form. Whereas Dwapara Yuga is all about energy, the age of energy. And you see that. I mean, really, we fully transitioned in Dwapara Yuga in the 1900s. And that's right when, in 1904, Einstein came out with the theory of relativity, E equals MC squared, a real understanding, a definition for what energy is. And so all that to say, your first point you made was, okay, maybe hundreds of years ago, this was only for a specific group of people. And that was in a time of Kali Yuga, where the environment wasn't sustainable to spiritual enlightenment, And so the only way to really go deep on an individual level was to renounce the world, to reclude from the world, because the world was too worldly. It was too material. It was too focused on the opposite of spirituality, which is to recognize spirit as everything, union. They're focused on, okay, me, my little plot of land, my little house, my family. So all that to say, now is the time of energy. And so you find people with tremendous amounts of energy, us as a civilization of a world with so much more of a profound understanding of energy. And so the environment is much more conducive of spirituality, of practicing these teachings. And so I think that was specifically why, this time, this line of masters chose that this is a path for everybody, because the environment is conducive and people are ready energetically. So that's kind of on a global level. Me personally, as Parvati mentioned, I have a pretty normal job. I have a family, lots of, responsibilities that come with all of that. What was the question specifically? How do I live that? How do I live these teachings?
How are you able to integrate them into your day?
Yeah.
And also how are you able to realize these truths on a day-to-day basis in a seemingly, worldly, but, just in the world of business and commerce and, families and children and household and paying bills, in some way they can perhaps still feel, because we're still in this transition, like you just said, between Kali and Dwapara, they can seem perhaps a little bit contrary, or opposing.
Yeah.
So how have you harmonized them? How do you integrate those opposing, potentially opposing poles?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's not easy. I think, you know, I came to Ananda when I was 17 years old. I was a single guy. I had nothing to worry about except for myself and maybe where I was going to sleep that night and what I was going to eat. And, you know, obviously, at that point, I approached the path in a very different way. You know, it was just, it was a whole new world that I could explore to my heart's content and serve and practice meditation 3 hours a day and do this, that, and the other thing. You know, and, you know, I was lucky to have that experience for many years and to, but what I think, as I touched on before, I really think the beautiful aspect of this path is the flexibility, is that aspect of not applying, it's not a one fit all, you know, it's not, okay, here's the recipe, do this and you'll be realized in, you know, 12 and a half years. It's like, you have to work with where you're at. You have to have a level of authenticity and awareness of yourself that you can work with yourself wherever you are. I mean, that's what these teachings emphasize, is that not everybody's going to be at the same place. It's impossible. And so these teachings can apply to any person in the world, no matter where they're at. And I think part of my own personal maturity has been understanding that for myself, you know, because maybe 10 years ago, I expected myself to embody these teachings in a certain way. But now it's impossible. You know, I wake up and usually a kid is jumping on my head and I try to get to work as quickly as possible. I'm all there all day with a relatively intense, you know, enjoyable and fulfilling, but nonetheless intense environment. You know, and I happen to have young kids too. So, you know, I get home and one wants to play. I have to change another's diaper, you know, lucky to get, you know, 6 hours of sleep if I can, and I'm back at it. And so, you know, on one hand, there's that constant checking in of saying, okay, I'm not where necessarily I think I should be, but a big part of what I've gotten from these teachings is that realness, that authenticity, saying, okay, I'm not there, but I'll work towards that, or I'll work on accepting where I am at, knowing that if I was supposed to be somewhere else, I'd be there, you know? And so I think, especially if we find ourselves in a super intense period of our lives, a big part of that struggle and contrast, I think, comes in from an expectation of something else. You know, I even think of any of my relationships with people, or anytime I'm mad, I wonder, like, okay, where is that expectation? Because if there's not an expectation, I wouldn't be mad. I expected somebody to show up. I expected something to go differently. But if there's not that expectation, there's just simply what is, and you're just experiencing that moment for the good or bad that it is. And so I think a big, huge shift in my own maturity, I guess you would say, is just accepting my life as it is, in all the chaos and all the, you know, lack of meditation or whatever it may be, based on what I expect it to be, it is. I can just say, okay, I'm accepting this for what it is, and I'm going to try my best today. And I'm going to, and recognizing that my dharma, my responsibilities right now, isn't just about me, you know. And I think spirituality can become selfish at times. It can be so inwardly focused. And I think that's why this path has such an emphasis on service. You know, Master said that, and Swami emphasized that this path is one of service and meditation. And it's interesting that he puts service first a lot of times. I won't imply that that means more or less, but I think a lot of times, and what the folly of, okay, I'm going to just renounce the world and just go deep in meditation. Well, a lot of times for many of us, our real liberation comes in serving others, because only in that place can we diminish the ego and that the hold that the ego has on us that says, you're important, you have to do this, you know, you're the most important thing, more or less. And you know, being a parent is the most tremendous dissolution of ego, because you're broken down to not even think about yourself. You know, it's like, oh, did I shower this week? Or, you know, it's like your full focus is on these two little beings and trying to, like, serve their needs. And so for me, especially in this period, it's been acceptance and trying to remove those expectations that I have of myself or what my life is supposed to look like from a spiritual and material perspective. And enjoying the fun of it, enjoying watching two little kids grow up and the world that they bring and the everything that is. Because as we mentioned earlier, Master said, the purpose of life is for our education and entertainment. And he replied to that. He said, but how few are either educated or entertained. And I think that applies to a lot of us, you know, and it's, you know, can you step back from your life and appreciate it simply for what it is? Find the entertainment in it, find the joy in it. And I think also a big way that these teachings have helped me is that sense of distance, that sense of space. Because, you know, there's a wonderful story that Swami Kriyananda tells. Swami Kriyananda was a direct disciple of Yogananda and lived with him for the last 3.5 years of his life. But one day, Yogananda took all the monks to go see a movie. And in those days, the movie theater was, by projection. So there was the light that came up. And it was a somewhat dramatic and thrillful movie, and they're all watching it. And at the moments of the most drama of this movie, Master pokes Swami, and he points up, looking up at the ceiling. You could see this light that's moving through the air and projecting on the screen. And that's what life is. You know, it's just this projection. It's just this Maya that's playing out for our own individual self-realization, but nonetheless a drama. Just having that awareness, and maybe you find yourself in the most difficult situation of your life, even if you can't completely get rid of the fear, even if you can't get rid of the pain or suffering, even just in the back of your mind, that recognition that this isn't me and this isn't real, and hopefully even coming to the place of recognizing that this is going to bring me to my next step, you know, that acceptance of what's happening. It's a simple, subtle, but absolutely tremendous gift, you know. It's as if you're dreaming, and in that dream you wake up and be like, oh, wait, I'm dreaming. And it changes everything, so.
Beautiful. Indra, thank you so much. That was a lovely, lovely answer. Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to share or add before we close? Any final thoughts?
Oh, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about East and West and this concept, and it's... you know, I think it's the beautiful reality of Ananda as well right now, that we have communities in all these different places, because we can interchange and we can mix and we can see, because it's so easy to think, okay, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, or, you know, they've got it better than we do. But, you know, I think any time that we can try to mix with realities other than our own is such a tremendous gift, you know, because you can go through life seeing life in one way. But the moment you step out, and I think that's why so many people love to travel and experience new things, because you get that opportunity to see new realities. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about Ananda Europe, is that you can, you know, here at Ananda Assisi, when we're all having lunch, you can be at a table where there's 6 different languages and countries represented. And there's just so much diversity and so much there. And, you know, it's a great blessing to have that opportunity to live here in this reality and have that perspective of life. So anyways, I appreciate the opportunity to share here.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate that you came. Really, sincerely, thank you.
Thank you.
And so, as Indra's mentioned, you know, and under Europe, we've got different groups who are active around Europe. They've got Facebook pages. So I really encourage you to just click online, have a little look around. And you can find our website, anandaeurope.org. So thank you for joining us. Thanks again to Indra.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time on Joy is Within You, the Ananda Europe podcast.